When you're a small business trying to grow and you're going through acquisition, that change management process can be very difficult. And I think the hardest part is just getting everybody to see the vision the same way, and then putting a proper process in place for actually executing on that vision, and then making sure everybody's doing what they need to do.
What's going on, everybody? Thank you for joining us today. This is the Passive Wealth Strategy Show, the show that will teach you how to build wealth with real estate without buying yourself another job. As always, I am your host, Taylor Lode. I'm a multifamily and self-storage real estate investor. And today we are joined by Jason Henneberry. He has a fantastic, incredible track record in real estate in the mortgage brokerage industry. And we're going to dig into what it takes to build teams and scale businesses. He is the co-founder and COO of Tango Financial, the largest mortgage brokerage in Canada. They fund more than $4.7 billion in mortgages every year with folks, just so many employees. He's doing so many big things, and he owns several other businesses. I'm really excited to bring this conversation to you today. Jason, thanks so much for joining us. For our listeners out there, can you tell us a little bit more about what you're up to these days? Then we'll dive into scaling businesses and teams.
Yeah, for sure. Thanks, Taylor. Thanks for having me on the show. I've got to be honest, when I shared that stat with you, we were earlier on in the year. This market's a little softer. So we were on track to actually fund $4.7 billion. That was our projection for the year, but we're a little bit off the mark, that's the state of the market this year. And you roll with the punches, but we are seeing activity pick up. The reports from our agents, our loan officers in the company, December, busy month. We've had some people have their busiest January. This is like mortgage applications in and fundings, busiest January since in the last couple of years. So I'm hopeful that 2024 is going to be a banner year. At least there's just some momentum going into the year. I don't know if you're feeling that on your side, but it's positive signs now for a change, which is good.
Good. I am hearing positive things here in the States, but it always depends on who you ask. And you mentioned, I think, a really interesting thing, and we'll get into kind of the metagame, scaling a team, if you will. You mentioned about reporting, the reports that you're getting from folks in the organization, reporting up how much they think they're going to close and everything like that. And since we're talking about scaling businesses and teams today, why don't we start there, right? When we have teams, we have people working for us, we need to know what they're up to, how they're performing, and get a better understanding of how our businesses are going to perform. So in your business, as you think about getting reports from folks down the chain from you, how do you set that up so that you're getting real, accurate, honest reports and not just maybe smoke and mirrors and folks overprojecting what they're going to do or just nonsense? How do you build like a reporting mechanism to manage the team?
Yeah, it's a good question. Every business is going to be different. For us, if we're looking at like our data, we have a leading indicator report, and it's really just the number of credit bureaus that we request. So we've got about 400 agents across a few provinces up here, which is the equivalent of state. And when they take a mortgage application from a consumer, from a homeowner, one of the first things that happens in that process is a credit report. And so we measure the volume of credit reports, and they're a leading indicator for us by about 6 months of the kind of business revenue or fundings, closings that we should see. So right now, credit reports are picking up. And then when we see those slow, I mean, there's seasonality too. So we look at seasonality, but that really helps us. Like, that's just raw data. And then, but I'm a big gut guy. Like, I like to talk to people. I like to feel the vibe, I guess. And so I interact with a lot of people, and I'm always asking, like, how are you feeling? How's the market? Are you feeling busier, slower? So I do a lot of gut checks as well and vibe checks with people. But we have a few other things like the credit bureaus, but I think it's good in business to have both. So you get a sense of how people are feeling about the future. And then you've got the hard data to back it up.
Great. So being the co-founder and COO, you've been in the company for the entire journey. And I would imagine that kind of forecasting, reporting, and performance management system of your team has probably grown over time. If so, what has that journey looked like from when you first got started and were growing the team as a solo or a couple of people to where you are today?
Yeah. So actually, it's the reporting and the analytics, payroll, compliance. So in our world, we're heavy on compliance. We've got mortgage agents, loan officers. There's a lot of payroll commissions and things like that. So having really good systems around collecting the information for what's coming, like expected revenues based on closings, capturing that revenue from all the different lending sources and closings, we do between 10 and 15,000 closed files a year, and then we have to distribute that compensation. So having really good systems for that is important. It's actually how we built Tango, was by creating systems, because in our world, there's a lot of, this isn't the right term for it, but just a lot of mom and pop type shops, like a lot of solo operators who are out there maybe producing team leads. They're still originating mortgages, but building teams at the same time. And so a lot of that work happens on the back, not back of a napkin, but spreadsheet-based accounting. And so we saw the opportunity. This is going back years ago. We formed Tango in 2017 now. It's going back a while. But we built some proprietary systems around that. And the goal was, hey, let's bring together all these groups. And we have about 40 different brands under Tango. And let's manage all the payroll, manage all the compliance, like help with those systems. But I'll be honest, it was a lot harder than I expected. Like, it's one thing to build the system and have the vision. It's another to get people to let go of old habits, old processes, merge into new processes, and have everybody paddling in the same direction. That is a very difficult thing to do. So you got what you want to accomplish, and then the actual change management, that implementation, very difficult. And we managed to get through that process. If we go back a few years, we had some challenging times trying to implement those systems. Not going to lie, it's not easy.
Okay, what are those challenging times really, what do they look like? Does it look like disagreements among the rest of the C-suite on how to get something done? Does it look like employee revolts and people just getting upset and leaving when something's done correctly?
No, I major mean, revolts or anything like that.
Know, but what does that look like?
If you're a small business owner or operator, maybe you're a solopreneur, or you're growing, maybe you're acquiring other businesses, maybe you're forming partnerships with other people. It doesn't matter what it is. It could be I was talking about a payroll system, but you're going to have to come together. You're going to have to agree on brand and logos and websites and payroll systems, accounting systems, ways of engaging your customers, whatever they are. For us, it's mortgage agents. For other people, direct customers. For you, you do a lot of investor capital raising and so on. So you're working with investors all the time. So as you bring people together, for sure, when you merge groups, everybody is going to have an opinion about what the right direction is. I think it's a lot easier sometimes if you're just a really big corporation, like a large publicly traded company acquiring something else. They've got a playbook for this stuff. There are very set rules. But when you're a small business trying to grow and you're going through acquisition, that change management process can be very difficult. And I think the hardest part is just getting everybody to see the vision the same way, and then putting a proper process in place for actually executing on that vision. And then making sure everybody's doing what they need to do, that can be difficult. Fortunately for us, we made it through that process with flying colors, which is great. But if you're thinking about expanding, that would definitely be something that it wasn't on my radar. I didn't realize that by going to such a large group that it would be as challenging as it was just to knock down all the bowling pins, so to speak. There were a lot of them.
So let's talk about that growth process. You founded the company in 2017. We're now in 2024, and it's been a little while, but still, that's not a ton of time. And a lot of new businesses don't even make it out of those first couple of years. And here you are today on track to do, let's say, several billion dollars in loans.
Sure. This year.
It's not over 4.7, quite on track. Still, the point is, let's talk about that growth by acquisition or other successes that you had in growing the company by going out to the market and either acquiring other businesses or bringing on key talent. How did you make that happen?
So we had some domain expertise. So I grew up in the mortgage industry. I had my own brokerage. And so that's key. We had proven that we could run our own shop. And then we had a lot of people that we knew in the industry. And so we really understood the problems that faced other groups of our size. So the domain expertise is key, understanding the problems, being able to articulate the problems to the right people, and being able to show people that by coming together, see, in our world, like, we were all spending money on the same things. And so it became painfully obvious that if we just joined forces, then we could consolidate that spend and we'd be much more efficient, like fiscally. And then through that efficiency, we could still spend the same amount of money overall, but we could flow downstream a lot more value to our agents. We were able to take the savings and go out and create better partnerships with other third-party providers like technology and marketing platforms and different things that would support the agent base. So we were able to, by coming together, we were able to create efficiencies and then expand our offering. And so we didn't line our own pockets. We just kept investing in the business. And that's what led to the success, because we were able to obviously communicate that value proposition and grow. And so when we first acquired the groups, we were a certain size. And then since then, though, we've been able to increase our size dramatically just through organic growth because word caught on that Tango was a place to be for all these different reasons. And so that was our path, and it worked quite well for us.
So were there particular, you mentioned about things that were being spent on and amongst the different businesses that ultimately came together, but were there particular like market conditions that were conducive to like consolidation in that industry at the time? And then how those market conditions change? Because markets in general tend to do that. There's some consolidation and things break up. Everything comes in cycles. The pendulum swings either direction. So was it the market ripe for consolidation in the industry at that time when you were doing it? And maybe it's not now. What's your perspective on that?
Yeah, no, definitely. There was some timing that was beneficial in our world. As if you're a brokerage and you're growing, you have a lot of lending partnerships that you need to keep happy. So you've got your clients, your referral sources, you're on the sales side. Then you're on the fulfillment side, you have to be able to actually place that mortgage business. And there are quotas and targets to achieve. And as the industry evolves, those targets keep getting bigger and bigger. And so when I first joined the industry, this is going back 20 years, the benchmark for being a large brokerage was that you would around 100 million. That was the volume of mortgages that you would need to fund in order to kind of maintain all your lender statuses. So it was about 100 million. And that's when I started the business. By the time I was mature in my career about 10 years ago, that number had already moved up to about 500 million. So about half a billion was the new number where it says, this is the size you need to be. When we first formed Tango, the number had moved up to a billion. And so a lot of your smaller shops aren't able to meet those numbers. And that trend has continued. And so now the number is 2-3. You got to be around the size that we are to be able to support all your partners in the way that they want to be supported. And so there's still opportunity for consolidation in the industry, but you have to have a really good plan. If you're a smaller shop, you really have to have it's probably a little bit harder today than it was when we did it, because we were able to scale with that momentum. But now you really need to have a plan to hit that 2 billion plus mark right out of the gate. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to create the environment that's going to allow you to attract the talent. So it's probably a little harder today, but there's still opportunity.
Okay. So whenever I speak with folks at your level of success, I always wonder, where do you go from here? Or what's the goal from here? You've created a significant amount of success, a successful business that's seemingly self-sustaining. Heck, you have time to talk with me this afternoon, evening, my time when we're talking.
Well, thank you. You're the one who carved out time for me. So thank you.
Evening, my time. But hey, but still, the question being, got this multi-billion dollar producing business. What's the next step? Do you look to exit and sell to a larger bank maybe? What's the plan from here once you've reached this promised land, if you will?
So we're pretty mature in our model. I think it's around what can you do with the model? So we're still very much in growth phase. Like we see that we can grow the brokerage to maybe the $10 to $15 billion mark. But the model is very well entrenched. So there's not it's a mature business. We know what we are. We know what we aren't. But then there's a lot of things that we can do around the business that support the business, but we don't necessarily want to change our internal model. So I've got two other businesses we do. One's a SaaS business. So it's a database marketing service for mortgage brokers and for realtors. And it's called the VIP Club. We do a monthly newsletter with contests and giveaways. We give homeowners TVs, like iPads, flat screens, and mortgage payments and stuff. And so our brokers can plug in to that service and give away cool prizes, and they get a lot of engagement from their clients. And then we have this other thing that we do, which is more marketing coaching. It's about how to engage partners and stuff like that. And that business is called Strategy Hub. And so all of these things, everything I do is in around the mortgage world, but those businesses aren't, they're not part of the main core business. They support it though. So our main core business, Tango, it plugs into those other businesses, but those are really separate entities because they require more of a dynamic, fluid, like what's happening in the market. It's evolving rapidly. We're listening. We're paying attention to shifting market trends, like social media is blowing up for people and how do you capture people's attention and all that. So it's very dynamic and fluid over there, while the main business is very stable, very mature, even though it still wants to grow and we have big plans. We're not really going to alter the model too much because it works. And so that's a really good example of there's a lot of synergy across those three businesses. They are mutually supportive, but they are exclusive, if that makes sense.
Okay. Yeah, I suppose in the question. You, Jason, you, the person, you've created this level of success. Do you see this as a, there's a lot of talk these days about infinite games, right? The game of business is an infinite game. There's no finish line when you're totally done. For you, what does this continued pursuit of growing a business, what does that
I understand
mean?
The question. I didn't quite fully address it, but I'm a very creative guy. I like to come up with like new. I'm always like, okay, what do we do next? And because, so if I just go back to what I was saying, because Tango is a very mature business as an example, you really don't want to mess with that model. And so that creativity, that flow, that energy goes into those other businesses which support the main business. So this goes back to, and I'm gonna jump ahead because I know you're gonna ask me a question later, and this is like a core philosophy, and you wanted me to think about a book that I run off of. So Good to Great, Jim Collins, he wrote a number of books, but I believe I read them all. I think it's in Good to Great where he talks about protect the core and then expand outward. And like great companies, what they do best is they know what they are and they never do anything that puts the core at risk because the core feeds everything else. And so if you look at what we've created here is like Tango's our core. And what we do is we test other ideas around it that can support the core, but we don't ever put the core at risk to try something new. And so I've got a couple of things that are working like Strategy and VIP, but man, we've tried like 10 things along the way, right? There's like 7 train wrecks on the sidelines that no one's ever going to hear about again. Businesses didn't make it. They didn't make the cut. And had they made the cut, then we would have brought them into the core. So what we do with like Strategy Hub and VIP is we test things out in the market. And when it works really well, then we bring those things back into the core and we support our internal agents with those initiatives. So that's just the way we've structured things. It's worked really well for us. And to answer your question directly, like there's no stopping. Like the growth continues, the creativity continues, and hopefully we have more successes that we can bring into the core. But that's how we do it.
Okay, you're having fun and making money. I got you.
I'm having fun.
So
having a lot of fun.
On the topic of time and attention management, right? You have a lot of irons in the fire, a lot of things going on. How do you manage not just your time and your calendar, which you're very graciously sharing with us today, but also your attention, your mental energy, and you know, keeping everything in the right box so you stay sane?
Yeah. So that's hard. I have moments. I'm in a phase right now where I'm a little wacky, feeling like I'm pulled in different directions. My favorite moments are when you can really, truly wind down. I find that there's just a lot of rest and restoration comes. The holidays, like Christmas holidays, they're a great time for me. I try to wind things down. I usually come up with new ideas over the holidays because I get a few days of rest and phone doesn't ring. So I've learned that about myself. In fact, all my businesses that I've ever created or all my main programs I've thought of the ideas over the holidays. And I've actually tried to structure my life around creating more downtime. And the way I do it is I look at things in the coding world. There's this concept, computer coding, there's this concept of a sprint. And a sprint is like a 2-week push of concerted effort to accomplish a project A coder is going to listen to that and be like, that is not at all what that is. But that gives you an idea. They have a defined project, 2 weeks, get her done. And there's like assessing and then executing and then debriefing kind of thing. And so 2 weeks isn't very long in our world. But so I try to do that over kind of a 60-day period where I break it into 2-week increments and I go, okay, the first couple of weeks of the period is really for planning and what are we going to accomplish, working with the teams. And then we go for 4 weeks hard, like full execution. And then that leaves another 2 weeks on the back end to debrief, wrap up projects, take some rest, go on vacation. So the team I try to operate my teams on this 60-day cycle. So January 1st to January 15th, as an example, is that beginning of a cycle. And it's, okay, what are we doing? What are we accomplishing over the next 60 days? It's building momentum. And then from Jan 15th to Feb 15th, and I'm in it right now, which is why I feel a little crazy, is everybody around me, all the teams, everybody's executing. So there's just a lot of, we know what we're doing. We know what we're accomplishing by the end of February. It's all hands on deck. And then Feb 15th or so, hopefully we've achieved what we wanted to achieve. We debrief, we regroup, and then March 1st, we start the next cycle. And what that allows me to do is it gives me at least 2 weeks somewhere in there during the wind down and the wind up where I really get some downtime and I really get to think critically about the next push. And that has allowed us to like, cycle on off very aggressively. And when we're on, we are really on. And when we're off, we really try to give ourselves that rest. And then the other thing that it does is the whole team knows that they get that downtime. And so if anybody needs to schedule a vacation, they try to do it in there. You need a couple of days. They try to do it in the down cycle. And so then what the benefit of that for me, because I run several different teams across the different companies, the benefit of that is when I need everybody on, they know that they know they need to be on. And it's actually a lot easier to get things done. Like vacation conflicts go away. People are all geared up to work because they know they're going to get a rest. So that's been really helpful for us.
Wow. Okay. I like that structure because it puts everybody on the same page as to the calendar of what's being expected. And it also incorporates a degree of very important downtime so that everybody can refresh and regroup and think about what happened, rather than looking at the entire year as one flat, we're always just going to keep working on this thing. You get this push and then this downtime so that you can really focus on a shorter term objective to get things done, if I'm understanding correctly.
No, 100%. And so if you want to pull on this for a minute, like we look at the other thing that happens is it aligns with natural down cycles in the year. So I just talked about January 1st so it takes advantage of like fresh starts. Like January 1st is a fresh start. Everybody does a New Year's resolution, right? So if you have these cycles, you're doing like six fresh starts on the business throughout the year. I actually call it the 60-day quarter. It's our internal term for it. And so you get six quarters instead of four, which is stupid, but it's like those people online who are like, I got 3 days in one day. And it's not that. I'm not trying to be that, but it's like you get six fresh starts on the business. But when you're in the down cycles, they kind of align with natural down cycles. So like you get over the holidays, right? December 15th to January 1st kind of thing, or December 31st, that's a down cycle. Everybody takes time off anyway. Nobody wants to work. And so you get a down cycle at the end of June, which is when school ends for people. You get a down cycle in the last 2 weeks of August, which is when nobody's worked. But the first 2 weeks of September is when people start ramping up. First week of January is when people want to ramp up anyway. And then so we have like, so it's really cool when you like lay a calendar on it. It's almost people were going to take time off here anyway and anyway, so we may as well make it official. So it's cool.
Nice. I can imagine people probably really appreciate that on the team. And seems like a great way to structure the entire year and get things done. I don't think there's anything necessarily wrong with New Year's resolutions, but it's just hard to track a goal for the entire year. I always say a quarter, 12 weeks, 3 months, however you want to break it up, a lot shorter than the entire year. Maybe 60 days, I'll think about.
Maybe 60 days, right? But yeah, I'm sure there's a lot of people listening to this right now that made a New Year's resolution that already realized, yeah, they're not going to. It's already broken. It's already broken.
It happens, but I think realizing that you broke it and you're a little bit past it, looking back and understanding, okay, why did I break it? Was that goal important to me? It's never the wrong time to try again. You don't have to wait until January 1st to give it another shot. You can restart right now.
Restart. If you missed it. Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
Love it. Right now, we're going to take a quick break for our sponsor.
Are you looking for a way to easily track your rental property finances? Check out Stessa. Stessa makes managing real estate investments simple. You can easily keep track of the performance, finances, and the paper trail of your rental properties. Our listeners can get started for free and then upgrade at any time to unlock their more advanced tools. And the even better news is that the upgrade is very affordable and will not break your bank. Smart investors know that tracking the numbers, tracking the money, tracking the finances is what really drives your success. Check out Stessa. It'll make your property finances easier. Just go to escapingwallstreet.com. Scroll down to the Stessa logo and get started for free. Now back to the show.
All right, Jason, I've got three questions. As you know, I ask every guest on the show. You already got to question number one, but I'm asking you anyway. Number one, what's your number one book recommendation?
All right. I'm sorry I let the cat out of the bag. That's earlier. Right. Jim Collins, Good to Great. I got to stick with my guns there. Yeah. The thing I refer to a lot is that protect the core and then expand outwards, that philosophy. I think it's really good. I talked about it in terms of projects earlier, but also in terms of if you're a small business owner or solo operator and you're trying to figure out how to grow your business, maybe your focus is I need a new lead gen system or something like that. So if you've got your core, maybe you've built your business on referral or some basic marketing or something like that. If those things are working, that's the core. And then you might say, okay, I want to try want to try a new marketing idea. So what I used to do when I was a solo operator, no team, I would spend some money if I was doing ads. I would try three different things at a time. So I always had max three things that I was trying to expand the business into. So I might have Google ads or a Facebook ad or something like that, or a newspaper ad, say. And I would try those three things a little bit. And then if one of them really worked better than the others, I would just kill the other two. And then I'd bring that one into the core. And then that would be part of my core marketing. And then I would run that for a bit and grow it. And then again, expand, try three new things, pick one, kill two, bring the one in. And so it's a very logical way of expanding your business. If you're running your own shop, it can help to get rid of that squirrel. I got to try 100 things. No, just try three, pick one out of them. And then and then try to add two more to that and continually test against two or three things. So that's what we did.
Nice. I like that.
Yeah.
Question number two, who or what inspires you?
Yeah, I am inspired by constantly creating. Like, I love the creative process of building a business. That's, for me, it's that whole journey versus destination thing. The process of creating new programs and then sharing those with the people that I have direct contact with, and then seeing the success that brings for other people, that keeps me going. And I'm fortunate to have a business or several businesses that I get a lot of that. I get a lot of feedback from people. I'm like, hey, try this. And they try it, and then we see the real world feedback. I think I've ultimately ended up designing my whole career around that kind of a setup, and it's been pretty good.
Nice. Question number three. Think about 80-year-old Jason. If you could sit down with him or maybe have a Zoom call with him, what advice or feedback do you think 80-year-old Jason would give to Jason of today?
Don't stop, man. Just keep going. I would say every once in a while, I feel like I'm too busy, or I don't have enough. Maybe I'm imbalanced a little bit work-wise, let's say. When I get those emotions, sometimes you feel like, okay, I need to dial it back. And what served me well is actually just to keep pushing. And because just when it's hardest, if you push through that, then there's just this whole new opening. It's like breaking through a cloud layer in a plane when you see the sun again, and you've got to put a little more thrust behind you to get through there. So that's happened several times in my career where I've felt like I don't think I have it in me to go the next mile. And there's always something beautiful on the other side of it. So just keep going. And I'm aging out a little bit, so I've got to really remind myself of that. I don't have the energy I used to have, so I have to keep going, man. That's the thing.
Nice. Jason, thanks so much for joining us today and sharing all this knowledge with us. If folks want to get in touch or learn more about you or any of your businesses, where can they track you down?
Easiest way to find me, just on socials, just at Jason Henneberry. You can look me up, and there's probably a few ways, Instagram, Facebook, LinkedIn, at Jason Henneberry, you'll find me all those paths.
Awesome. Thank you once again for joining us today. To everybody out there, thank you for tuning in. If you're enjoying the show, please take a moment and leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe and catch us here every weekday. Right now, I hope you have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk to you on the next one. Great. Well, thank you once again for joining us today. To everybody out there, thank you for tuning in. If you're enjoying the show, please take a moment and leave us a rating and review on Apple Podcasts. Don't forget to subscribe and catch us here every weekday. Right now, I hope you have a great rest of your day, and we'll talk to you on the next one.